Well, I'd like to welcome everybody and thank you for joining us on this Member Solutions talk. And I've got some dogs barking in the back here. Sorry about that. So just also want to thank Member Solutions for doing such a great job. You guys are quite a resource in the martial arts world, and really want to thank you for allowing me to be here and talking and for all your good work. So I'd like to chat with you all around this crazy technology that has been called Fast Defense and let you know a little bit about how this stuff works. We were voted the best self-defense for women in the industry just last year, and unfortunately there was no category for men. I think we would have probably won that as well, because the training works just as well for men as it does for children. We also do programs for seniors, and pretty much it works for everybody. But I want to let you know a little bit of how it works. The Fast Defense technology is a non-style specific technology. In other words, it works for virtually any martial arts style. It is not a technique-based system. It's more of a concept-based system is what I like to say, which means the technology we teach is more of a teaching methodology where we can take people from point A to point B in a very short amount of time, hence the name Fast Defense. FAST is also an acronym for Fear Adrenal Stress Training, so we teach people how to deal with the adrenaline and the stress of an actual assault, so that, God forbid, if they ever have to deal with a real situation, they will be able to deal with the adrenaline rush, which I'm going to talk about here today, you know, and why when people get into an adrenaline rush, things kind of get crazy, and what specifically happens there. And then the training methodology and the tools and the drills that we do are all based around a very playful way to induce the adrenaline rush into our students, and then to give them a positive outcome. And I'll talk more about how that actually works. So to get started, I want to take you guys through what I call the ABCs of self-defense. Typically, when we think about self-defense, we think about what we do in the martial arts, our techniques. You know, if the person attacks you this way, what's this style's techniques? You know, and it's looking at it from kind of a technique-based system. Well, in fast defense, we look at self-defense in a three-tiered mode, where we call what I call the ABCs of self-defense, to really give a comprehensive look into what happens in a real-life situation and how can we respond appropriately. So the A stands for awareness. I'm just going to run you through the ABCs real quickly, and then I'll break them down. The A stands for awareness, and when we talk about awareness, not just being aware of our external environment, like don't walk down a dark alley at 3 o'clock in the morning and stay away from dangerous characters. Obviously, that is an important part of awareness, but we go into internal awareness in that we look at what do the predators look for when they look for an easy victim. We want to learn how not to communicate as easy prey for the predator-prey relationship, just like the mountain lion, when it goes hunting, doesn't go after the biggest, strongest doe or buck. The human predators tend to not do that as well. They look for typically the easy victims. So we teach our students how to be aware of how they're communicating, so that we want to look come off as in an assertive demeanor versus a passive or aggressive. We also go into some awareness of what some of the social conditioning that we get as women, as men, these kind of funny little voices that we get, like, for guys, never back away, never back down, or you'll look like a wimp. Well, there are times when you definitely want to back down. Or should I look tough? Or just some of the crazy conditioning. For women, oftentimes, it's don't be rude, don't make a scene. You know, and there are situations where it's absolutely appropriate for them to be a little bit rude if this person is really being inappropriate and provocative. Then we go into awareness of, as I've already mentioned, what are the predators looking for? We've done some pretty in-depth interviews with them to determine, you know, we want to learn how to dissuade this person before the situation ever starts. And so we've got interviews with them that really corroborates all the techniques that we work with. We also go into awareness of, in a tough situation, what happens to us internally? What happens to us on an emotional basis, on a physical basis, and a biochemical basis that can get us into trouble? And that's where I'll go into the Adrenaline 101. So we really go into the awareness because, as they say, awareness is 90% of the battle. It absolutely is. The B stands for boundaries. That's a fancy word for how to draw a line in the sand and back it up with a good verbal, assertive stance to keep this person from going any further. Assertive demeanor works like magic, and it's got nothing to do with kick-punch, but it's got everything to do with stopping the situation before it gets physically violent. Incidentally, most situations, most altercations don't start off with some sort of violent violent punch or sucker punch or whatever. They usually start off with some sort of verbal altercation, eye contact, and if it can be dealt with early on, it can almost always be de-escalated. And that's the best self-defense of all. So the verbal skills, as far as I'm concerned, are the most important self-defense skills we can impart. The statistics are 3/4 of assaults on women are successfully perpetrated with a verbal threat alone, and so that's a scary but powerful statistic there if we can learn how to deter the verbal threat. And then for guys, I think it's even higher. It's not that we're sexually accosted, but usually it's some sort of macho verbal provocation, and if we can learn how to deal with it quickly and appropriately at that level, it can almost always be kept from becoming physical. And then the C stands for combat. I also like to rephrase that as core confidence drills, where this is where we teach our students very simple techniques. I don't need to talk to you about technique. You guys are the masters of technique. But with this particular style, this teaching pedagogical methodology, what we do is we just impart simple techniques and allow the students to use the adrenaline and the fear that for most people is their worst enemy, how to use that as their jet fuel to fight if they have to. The mindset we're going with is we're going to do everything we can to not fight, just as I'm sure you're imparting to your students. But if we do have to fight, then it's not going to be a game. It's going to be all out. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get out of the situation and get to safety. So that's the ABCs in a nutshell. What I want to do is kind of break it down, and as I do it, I'm going to give you some drills. Incidentally, at the end of this talk, I'm going to give you some resources. I've got some real cool YouTube videos that you can go to and have and really see live the drills that I'm talking about. And then I've also got some handouts, some Word documents that I'm absolutely happy to email you if you would like to contact me directly after this is done. So let's jump into the awareness. Now, I want to start off with what I call Adrenaline 101. Again, you know, we deal with, in the martial arts, in a technique-based paradigm, but we do it in a way that's safe and cooperative so that our students don't get hurt and we can make it a positive experience. The challenge with that is that in an intense situation, when we're really out there and things get tough, and I'm not just talking about an actual physical fight, I'm talking about someone just coming up and giving us what we call a woof, which is a verbal provocation. Things start happening in our bodies and our minds and our emotions that can make it pretty tough to deal with the situation effectively. So what's going on there? Well, one, we are getting an infusion of adrenaline and endorphins and ephedrine that are being dumped into our neuromuscular system. It's called neural flooding. That's why people get those shaky knees and that queasy stomach. It's all that biochemical energy running out to our extremities for the fight or flight response. It happens whether we like it or not. It happens. And it's there for a powerful reason. Well, other things that happen are blood starts racing from the major organs out to the muscles in the extremities, again, for that fight or flight response. Well, one of the organs that's losing the blood is the good old brain. So in grossly simplified terms, what we phrase this as we move very quickly from the high road of the brain, which is our cognitive ability, it's the frontal lobe of the brain, it's where we do most of our rational thinking and problem solving. Well, all of a sudden, we're not accessing that part of the brain because we're going into survival mode. So we go down into what we call the low road of the brain. Now, specifically, this is the limbic system, and the specific part of the limbic system is the amygdala. Now, the amygdala is the emotional brain center, which explains why, under duress, people don't respond typically rationally and consciously, but they respond in emotional knee-jerk ways. And sometimes these ways can get us into some trouble. So we're in that low brain. Well, some other challenges arise with that as well. For one, this part of the brain has not evolved very, very far because it's really only there to help us survive. So some things happen. We get very limited faculties. We lose our hearing. We get auditory exclusion. We get tunnel vision. Lose our peripheral vision. We get a tachypsyche, which is kind of a fancy word for saying it's a distorted sense of time. People who have been through car wrecks, they say it's like watching a slow motion movie. It's the same thing. It's kind of like those dreams you've had when you're fighting in your dreams and you can't run or you can't move. It's a real life paralysis that actually happens to people in a real life situation. Well, another thing thing we lose is our dexterity. We lose our fine motor control. This is a real bummer for those of us who are martial artists, and we've trained for years and years on these fine motor skills, but suddenly the part of our brain that's functioning isn't able to access those skills because those skills are actually stored in the high road of the brain. So, to make it just a little more challenging, if people have had any sort of trauma in their past, for example, for me, I got beaten up pretty badly by my older brother growing up, and so that freeze response was really drilled into me. So for me, for many, many years, if I got into an altercation, I would go into that same freeze response. Even though I was good in sports and good martial artists and later on joined the Marine Corps and all that, it really wasn't until I got involved with this adrenal stress training where I was able to recondition that response to where I could have a more of an action mode rather than going into that knee-jerk response. So the point being here, we've got all this crazy stuff happening. Now, in the martial arts, in the school, again, we're not accessing that low road of the brain unless people are really getting nervous before a competition or a testing or something like that. And then it's typically not quite as intense as a real-life situation. But through some very playful drills, we can take people into that adrenaline. Now, I'm going to cover that more in the C portion of this talk, but we start playing with the concept in the awareness. So here's what we do, and just kind of get a sense of this. I do have this written down so I can send you a Word document where it's more clearly delineated. But what we do is we line our students up, and let's say I had a group of 20 people. I would line them up 10 people facing the other 10 people. And you want to give them about 15 or 20 feet in between. I have the people, I stage it where I just say, okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to walk towards each other, and I want you to imagine it's a good friend of yours that you haven't seen, and you're going to go up and you're going to greet that person. And I just say, don't worry, you can't screw it up, they're going to be nervous and all. And just all I ask is that when I say freeze, if you could please freeze where you're at. And so I say, the way I orchestrate it, okay, so you just look at each other, imagine it's a good friend you haven't seen in a while, you're going to go greet that person, go for it, go. And then they all go for it. And then people right away, they're kind of nervous, so they're laughing and all. And before you know it, they're shaking hands, and some of them are hugging. And I give it about a second, and then I just say, freeze. And I just say, stay right where you're at. Then I say, raise one arm up towards the other person. And so they all raise their arms up, and what you'll see is that every single group within inches will be at about one arm length distance. And I say, that's really interesting because I didn't tell you to greet this person and stop within one arm length distance, but yet that's exactly where everybody went. And what this points out is that this is the natural distance, the appropriate distance where we hang out with someone who's a really good friend. Now, this is important because when people get in intense situations, people get very close, almost and sometimes literally nose to nose. It's a very dangerous place to be. It's not smart, but it happens all the time. So then I bring this in as an awareness of physical proximity and also awareness that, this is the appropriate, this is really, this one-on-one distance, this you could call it with your kids, your space bubble, however you want to call it, this is our real estate and our property. And it's really important, especially for a lot of women, to empower them to say, you have the right and your personal responsibility to yourself to choose who gets in that close and who doesn't. Having the awareness that under adrenaline stress, people get very close very quickly. Then I break them apart, and then we repeat the situation, only I change it up a little bit. And I say, I want you to imagine, and I'll point at one side. I'll say, you're standing outside your house, your school, wherever you are. You're just standing around. And this other person is going to come up, and they're going to deliver, you could say give you a book, deliver the mail, however you want to orchestrate it. All I'm going to say is, all I ask is that when I say freeze, please freeze. So then the way you say it, it's kind of nice to orchestrate it. Okay, everybody, look at each other. Imagine you're a postal worker. You guys are just staying there, standing outside your house. Deliver the mail. Go. You really want to orchestrate it pretty cleanly. As soon as they all go up and they're just handing the article to the other person, and you say freeze. Now, what you'll see is people will be at about 1.5 to 2 arm lengths distance. And I just say, go ahead and just pay attention to that distance. It's a little, nobody, no nobody is as close as you were last time when you were greeting a friend. This, in our society, is the normal, what I call professional distance. In other words, people get in this distance 100 times a day. When you're talking to a coworker, when you're talking to a store clerk, you're in one of a million situations where this person is not dangerous, but they're not a good friend, but it's the normal distance. Now, I also point out that other cultures have different distances. So when you travel abroad, you want to be aware of what the distances are. So I have them get a sense of that distance, and again, it's about 1.5 to 2 arm lengths distance. Now, this is where we identify the adrenaline rush, and it's real simple to do. I say, okay, those of you who just received your mail, stay where you are, do not move. When I say so, those of you who just delivered the mail, take a giant step towards that person, not to the side, but straight towards that person, and just kind of hold it there. So then you can see they're getting nervous. Say, okay, giant step forward, go. And they all step forward. Now, you'll get some people who are really shy, and they'll end up like 1.5 feet away. So you want to go up and just kind of gently give them don't push them in, but gently guide them in to be a little closer. You'll feel the room change dramatically. The energy will just, all of a sudden, it'll go from that playful energy to all of a sudden to really strained. Now, what I say is, okay, stay there. I know it's uncomfortable. Raise your hand if somewhere in your body you're getting a little uh-oh button saying, this is uncomfortable, this is too close. And you'll see 100% of the group will usually raise their hand. You've just identified the problem, which is the adrenaline rush, and it does not take much to elicit the adrenaline rush. Then I also say, okay, go ahead and stay there. I know it's uncomfortable. Try to determine where in your body. Let's get some awareness of where does our intuition reside. In other words, even though our brains might be, you know, kind of freaking out in the heat of the moment, our bodies are usually there telling us that, you know, hey, there's something wrong here. Every bad situation that has ever been analyzed, if the person really taps into what they were feeling beforehand, they almost always say, I had some funny feeling. So you're identifying the adrenaline rush. It doesn't take much to trigger it, and the intuition now, and where does that intuition reside? So even if my brain is not working so well, my body can tell me to be on guard. So this is one simple little drill that I do with people, and I do it in every fast offense class because it really identifies the problem. It seems kind of silly, but you'll be amazed that it does not take much to elicit the adrenaline rush. All the time I get people wondering, Bill, how in the heck are you going to adrenalize me? And in truth, it's really very simple to adrenalize people. Then we take people, I'm going to kind of shorten it up because I've still got to cover the verbal and the combat, but then we cover the communication skills. In other words, 93% of communication is nonverbal. It's not the content of what we say that really affects people and also draws in the predators or deters the predators, but it's our body language, our eye contact, our tone of voice, facial expression is communicating more than the actual words that we say. So we want to teach people how to communicate in an assertive way versus a passive demeanor, and we really talk about it. You know, and then with the kids, I'll ask them, when a bully looks for someone to pick on, what type of person do they look for? And these kids have it. They're dialed in. They say, wow, they look for someone who's small, who's weak, who wears glasses. Maybe they're not shy. Maybe they're shy. Maybe they don't have friends. And really let them feed you with the answers because they've got it. And that's great. And then we look at, okay, now how does that look in the body? And I'll either have them do it themselves or I'll have them put me into a really passive communication with my feet, with my knees together, hunched over, hands kind of down at my side, furtive glances, the whole passive demeanor, so that they can get a visual of what that looks like. Then we do the opposite, and we go into aggressive. Okay, now, you know, what's an aggressive demeanor look like? And then also we talk about the difference between aggressive and assertive. A lot of people don't really understand that, and it's an important distinction. So we go again into what does aggressive communication look like? And so we'll get into the same angry stance and fists, hands and fists, and a mean look on our face, and a tone of voice that's angry and provocative, and an eye contact, just again for them to get a visual of what does an aggressive stance look like so that they can learn how not to do that. Then we introduce the assertive model, and that's simply what I call the assertive go-forward stance, which is one leg back, one leg forward, hands up in a defensive posture. the communication of this is so powerful. People don't realize what a powerful communication tool the hands are. When people are on TV, they say, don't move your hands, because the hands are so incredibly expressive and they want to just get the lips. So here, we want to use those hands, and just up in a assertive defensive posture is incredibly powerful to deter a potential attacker. So there's a lot that goes into awareness. Well, then the next piece is the verbal. And this is probably the most challenging thing to do for the students and for the instructors, but the verbal defense, as I mentioned earlier, is the most important self-defense skill there are. I'm putting together some YouTube verbal scenarios that will be available on YouTube. I do have some, I believe, up right now and I'll tell you how to go look at that. The key thing here is what we're doing is we're going up and we're woofing the students. In other words, we're playing like a dog. If a dog's intention is to bite someone, you're not going to hear a bark. They come up and just bite. But as the human predators are the same way. If their intention is to come up and ambush you, they're just going to ambush you. But most often, there's some sort of verbal provocation. Like a dog, when it goes woof, 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 it's trying to provoke you. When a human predator comes up and they're using their verbal, they're trying to intimidate you. They're trying to get you to comply with them. Well, that's real defensible if you can look at it in that way. But the verbal defense, the verbal provocation works so well for the bad guys out there, but if we can learn how to neutralize it, it's a very, very powerful self-defense. And the truth is, we don't want to fight if we can avoid it at all. Not only do you have to win there in the fight, you may have to win a few days later when they come back with a knife or a gun or 10 buddies, and then oftentimes we have to win in court. So the main thing is, again, do everything you can to not fight, and the verbal skills are really important. We break the verbal component up into three modules, and that's what I call the color code, which is a modified version of Jeff Cooper's color code. And I just made a yellow alert, which is just normal conversation situations where you don't know if this person's dangerous or not, and it's okay to talk to the person. Orange alert is as soon as you feel a threat, as soon as you feel any intimidation, you want to adopt an orange assertive demeanor. And then finally the red is this is one really ticked off hombre, and you've got to do whatever you can to keep this person from becoming a fight. And then, of course, beyond that would be conditioned black, which is the actual fight. So this color code is all around the verbal defense. It's a step-by-step process to allow people to basically determine what is the level of threat and then how can I respond at the appropriate level of force, as opposed to going passive, which would be to underreact, or to be aggressive, which would be to overreact. So we take our students through verbal scenarios where we bring them out one at a time, and this is where we line up the rest of the class, and the class actually watches each student go through it. And we also, this is where we bring in the coach component. When we teach, there's three components. There's the student, there's the woofer who is playing the bad guy, and then there's the coach who is the person who stands behind the student and is actually there to kind of be a guardian angel to help them dynamically fix anything that might go wrong within the scenario. And then we play these things, we play out the scenario. And the intention is to allow the student to get that verbal defense, to get that intent and that the adrenaline rush, which, again, doesn't take much to elicit, and for them to respond appropriately using good assertive demeanor and their verbal skills. It is a challenging thing to do, but there's really no greater gift that you can give to your students than to really neutralize the woof of the woofers of the world out there. Finally, we go into the C, which is the combat, it's the core confidence drills. Now, the drills are based off of what I call the portal of safety drill. In other words, try to imagine you've got yourself on your floor, and the students start at one end, and their job is to go through. I usually put a couple cones out. Their job is to get through the portal of safety. But what they have to do is they have to deal with a particular challenge that's going to be in the way of the portal, in the way of safety, and they need to open up that doorway. They need to create the opening by doing something to get this person to back away. And so the easiest one that I do, and again, I've got some real good video examples of this. The easiest one to do is to give them an Action Flex bat or a padded bat. You can use the Sensory Blocker. You can use pretty much anything, but you want to have it soft because they're going to be hitting you with it, so you don't want to take the shots. So the purpose of it is that you go up and you don't need to do any verbal threat at all. You just say, this is a situation where you're backed in a corner and you've got to fight your way out, and your safety is going to be over there through the two cones. You go up and you just kind of play threatening. You can even make it very playful. I do this with kids that are 5 or 6 years old and make it really playful, and they have a blast with it. And so the idea is you're going to go up and you're going to keep a little bit of distance. So you want to make it clear. You want to help them have a success. So you're going to keep a little bit of distance and then pretend like you're going to attack them, and then you clearly cross the line. The line is a subjective thing, but it's typically about 2 arm length distance is where it's not appropriate for them. If they were to hit you, they would have to come after you. So you want to stay back and teach them this is not about attacking, this is about defending. So they're staying back, they're trying to keep their distance, and then you clearly cross that line, and I just stick my hand out, and their job is to hit the actual hand, not the head or anywhere else. I just say clearly the hand. Now here's where we bring in some of the powerful technologies. Fast Defense uses NLP. We use Olympic coaching. We also use biofeedback. So that when somebody does something correctly, you want to give them a response. You want to pull your hand back, kind of like you just touched a hot stove. And ow! And you give a little exclamation to let them know, wow, that was a good shot. What it does in them, now bear in mind, in the science of the brain, in the brain mapping, in these little drills, they're pretty quickly going down into the low brain. Even though you're not doing anything, you're not yelling at them or anything like that, just the performance anxiety of being out there in front of other people and just the little rush will get them to start bouncing down into that low brain. That's a good thing because then you're conditioning that low brain to have action responses, which is why when you do that response in their low brain, they go, oh, that's working. As opposed to if they're not doing it, then you don't respond. They don't respond accordingly. You don't reward them. And then they go, this isn't working. And what they'll do is they will actually find, through the coach's help and through their own journey in the scenario, they will find the power and they'll hit with, before you know it, they're hitting with power. Now, another thing that you want to be real clear about is that when people get adrenalized, people hold their breath. I was just at Master Chris Natsky's testing over the weekend. Incredible testing. But I saw these people out there, when they were doing their forms, they were breathing like just beautifully. But as soon as sparring came up, I saw these first, second, third degree black belts, a lot of them were holding their breath. Where's the kiai? What's the purpose of the kiai? And so it's really important at this when the students do these drills to break that hold your breath syndrome, which is really what gets people into trouble. When a deer freezes in the headlight of a car, it's because it takes a short intake of breath and it holds its breath and it locks up. Humans do the same thing. So this is a time when you can get the student to yell. Now, to facilitate that, I also have the whole line. The rest of the class is yelling. And you're yelling, yell no, or whatever fun thing you want to yell so that they can use their power and really crank it up and have a success. The whole system is predicated on simplicity of technique, simplicity of the actual drill so that they have a success. And then you build on that success. You can make the technique a little more complicated. You can make it a little more intense, and it's all predicated on a step-by-step process where in a very short amount of time, you can get people to use the adrenaline as their best friend should they ever need it, instead of it being their worst enemy, which is what it is for most people. So I'm kind of running through this pretty quickly. There's a lot of information there. We've got the ABCs, the awareness, really important stuff, and there's a lot to it. We got the B, the verbal, probably the most important self-defense skill there is. And then finally, there's the C, which is the combat. Now, the portal safety drill that I talked to you about is just one real simple, kind of a good starter. There's a lot of ways that you can do it just with shields, where maybe for the student to get through the portal of safety, they might have to do a heel palm or a palm heel into the shield, and then they get to go by once they get it with power. Maybe they do a kick. You can really play with this. Really, the imagination is the only limit to this whole technology because it is not a technique-based system. It's a concept-based system which you can, with practice, you can start to apply and inject any particular technique that you would like to into the teaching methodology. So For the rest of you, just once again, I am at your service. Whether you have any questions, whether I can give you more information around fast defense, easy defense, any way that I can help you out, I love being as accessible as possible among my crazy travels and all that. But once again, my email is pretty simple. It is BillKipp, B-I-L-L-K-I-P-P, as in papa, at AOL.com. And my website is fastdefense.com. And the new association, I'm in the process of creating the website. It's going to be another month and a half or so before I get it up and going, but it will be located at fastsuccess.org. But again, if you go there now, you won't see anything here. It's not up yet. But what I'm doing is I'm actually starting the association up as of May 1st. I'll be sending out an info magazine, an online magazine that's going to be packed full with drills. I'm putting it together right now with drills and coaching tips and teaching tips. And again, it's the perfect, easy, entry-level portal into this training for anyone who's interested.